Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and happy Friday. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio with your host, Coach Karen Scott. Today, we're going to be talking about a few health and wellness tips along with the intro of our book read. There's still time to invite someone so they can be a part of this book club or book read. It's just something that I think will be very impactful, enlightening, and encouraging. So take a moment and invite someone, and we will be starting very shortly. Again, welcome to Blog Talk Radio with your host, Coach Karen Scott. As you know, I am a certified purpose and character development coach who continues to look for ways to help people discover and develop their spiritual gifts so that they can make an impact on the world based on the purpose that God has given them. In addition to that, I am a health and wellness distributor and advocate with Youngevity. So that's the health side. And we look for ways to help people continue to live towards optimal health. Does it say you're going to not get sick? Of course not. But it say that it will help you along the run and along the way as you, think about what you're going through, whether it's a sickness or a disease or anything of that nature, but it just helps you a little bit with moving towards the optimal health and wellness. As I stated earlier, I'll be sharing a health tip with you, and then we will intro our book read. I thank everyone for joining the show tonight. I truly appreciate that. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about raw and cooked vegetables, the pluses and the minuses. When it comes to raw vegetables, we sometimes think, what are the healthiest ways to eat them to get the most nutrients? Here's what some experts say about the best way to prepare your vegetables to get the most benefits. As you know, raw diets have been getting a lot of attention. Some people believe eating raw foods means you're getting more nutrients, but when you cook them, you tend to kill the natural enzymes as well as the vitamins and minerals. On the other hand, some people say cooked foods are easier on your digestion, are healthier, and sometimes taste better. So, what's the truth about raw versus cooked vegetables? How should you be eating your veggies to get the most benefits? Do we think that more nutrients are always better? Raw vegetables often contain more nutrients. So naturally, of course, people are going to think that raw vegetables are more healthier for you. And sometimes that's true. But the reality is more complex. When it comes to the good-for-you components of foods, Dr. Michael Greger says, it's not what you eat, it's what you absorb. And that is also what Dr. Wallach says from Youngevity. It's not what you eat, is what you absorb and is what you don't eat. For example, participants in the raw food diet group consume more beta-carotene per day than any other group. But participants in the wholesome nutrition diet group absorb the most of this critical antioxidant. So when you cook your veggies, you do lose some nutrients, but others become more available for your body to use. Here are some benefits of cooked vegetables. In addition to apparently supplying you with more absorbable beta carotene, as mentioned, cooked veggies give your body more of certain other antioxidants, such as lutein, that's L-U-T-E-I-N, which is good for your eyes, and lycopene. They talk about that a lot in tomatoes, but this helps protect your heart and your bones. When you when you cook vegetables, it also gives you more minerals. The heat releases bound calcium, making more of the mineral available for your body to absorb. And the difference can be very significant. Cooked spinach has 245 milligrams or a cup of calcium, while raw spinach only has 30 milligrams or a cup of calcium. Cooking veggies can have other benefits too. What could it do? In a study that was published by Cold Spring Harvest Symposia Biology, which was conducted by Harvard University, shows that cooking aids in chewing, increases digestibility, and improve the net energy value of food. Some evidence also suggests that cooked foods contribute to the evolution of the human brain because it is greatly showing an increase in caloric yield of the diet as a result of the greater ease of chewing, digestion, and absorption of food. With many vegetables, the best way to prevent them is that you get to eat them. If cooking them means you'll eat more, that could be a very good thing. Here are some vegetables, about nine, that may be more nutritious when cooked. Spinach, asparagus, tomatoes, mushrooms, potatoes, carrots, celery, and green beans, and legumes, which is beans, red kidney beans in particular, is great for nutritious value when cooked. However, when cooking, some methods you should avoid is frying foods, vegetables, or what have you, creates free radicals, which is carcinogens, and they damage the cells, which you need to have healthy cells. So you definitely want to try to stay away from fried foods because they contain trans fats, which are unsaturated and are linked to various diseases. So what we want to do is we want to feed our cells healthy, because you don't want the cells to be neglected from having the right nutrients and minerals. When it comes to preserving the antioxidants of vegetables, it seems like steaming is better than boiling. Why? Because when you boil foods, some of the nutrients get lost in the water. A study shows that 14% of antioxidants were lost on average across 20 vegetables when boiled. With that said, eating more of the boiled vegetables can make up for the loss. Also, keeping the water and using it to cook grains means you can still absorb those good for you compounds. I can remember my mom, when she would boil potatoes to be mashed, she would use that same potato water to mash potatoes in addition to the milk. So it's kind of like she's kind of like putting the nutrients and the vitamins and minerals back in that. And also know that when we were growing up, our foods were less tampered with. So that's the difference. Four foods you may want to eat raw at least sometime: bell peppers, broccoli. Broccoli contains 3 times the amount of the cancer-fighting compound, which is sulforaphane. Onions is another thing that you can eat raw because it protects against heart disease. Bell peppers, they have antioxidants in them, and more when you cook them. Garlic is another raw vegetable that you can eat. It's anti-carcinogenic, so that's another good cancer-fighting vegetable that you can eat. So when you think about raw vegetables and cooked vegetables, they both have their pros and cons. But when you eat too many raw vegetables, or crucifers as they call them, it can lead to hypothyroidism, which is a condition where your thyroid gland doesn't make enough thyroid hormones. How much is too much? 10 cups of raw kale a day or on a regular basis is probably the limit. Plus, the amount varies based on the different types of cruciferous veggies. And that's vegetables like leafy. That's leafy vegetables like spinach, lettuce, kale, collard greens, anything green and leafy. That's what they consider cruciferous veggies. If you want to cook broccoli and other cruciferous veggies, which include Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, kale, radish, rutabaga, turnip greens, arugula, here are 3 science-backed steps you can take to maximize their health benefits. 1, pre-chop them first and let them sit for 40 minutes before cooking. Add some mustard seed powder, or radish, horseradish, or wasabi after cooking, or add a small amount of fresh, raw, cruciferous veggies to your cooked one. So basically, you're cooking kale, maybe add some, cauliflower to it or shredded Brussels sprout to it that are raw. Just another, idea for when you're preparing raw vegetables. But most importantly, when you're eating vegetables, eat veggies the way you want and listen to your body. It's well established that people who eat more vegetables and fruits are less likely to suffer from chronic diseases. When it comes to consuming more healthy, colorful fruits and vegetables, its best way to eat them is the way you prefer. Dr. Michael Greger says the best way to eat your veggies is really whichever way will get you to eat most of them, with the exception of frying. So when it comes to raw versus cooked vegetables, listen to your body, find a balance that works for you, because we are all unique. You may want to make changes to that. You want to make changes to that as you age. But ultimately, eating more veggies, whether raw or cooked, is what matters the most for your health. So think about what you think about raw versus cooked, and how do you prefer to eat your veggies, and how many raw veggies do you eat? How many cooked veggies do you eat? How many veggies do you eat? Do you eat veggies at all? just think about that the next time you're preparing your meal, whether it's, you know, lunch or dinner, and if you're going to do it raw or cooked. And when you cook it, one thing I know based on certain veggies, you don't want to cook them too much. Like broccoli, you kind of want to, for me anyway, steam them so that you just have still like a little crunch to them. Same with cabbage, have a little crunch to them. And, you know, again, it's based on how you will cook them. And I'm going to open up the line. You can comment or you can question or anything of that nature before I go into the intro about the book we're going to read and the author who wrote it. So bear with me 1 second. Okay, the lines are open. I just wanted to share that a little bit. You know, I always like to give a little health tip before we, you know, go into the next topic. But also always want to open up to see if there's any comments, questions, concerns, or even something you may be doing to your veggies that, you know, you want to share with the group. Or you could just sit back and just enjoy the show as we proceed on. But the lines are open.
Raw veggies are mad good.
Yes. Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Broccoli is at the top.
When you, oh, for raw veggies, broccoli, cauliflower.
Oh, yeah, true.
And even Brussels sprouts, people, even if you don't like Brussels sprouts, if you shred them as if you were making coleslaw, they're good that way as well. Just a little raw veggie tip. There's no more comment. Go ahead. Spinach?
Spinach.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Yeah, spinach is good, especially
salad.
Like with salad. Yes.
Yeah.
Spinach is
salad.
Good like a salad.
Or use it.
Yeah.
Or in a sandwich.
Yeah.
Hi, Karen.
Yes.
It's Laverne.
Hi,
how are you?
Hi, Laverne. Good. How you
Hi,
doing?
Hi, yes. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to make a comment. Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment that I usually use my raw vegetables. Basically, I make healthy smoothies with them, like kale and spinach.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I usually
that
do that
good.
With, like, yeah, with apple or a little pineapple and blend it up and drink it like for, you know, with some Greek yogurt, plain Greek yogurt, and blend it up for a morning breakfast, a quick morning breakfast.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I usually try to do mine. I'm trying to stay on a healthy kick.
Yes,
I'm always doing
like
fruit, but I guess I could add some veggies to it. I'm always just fruit bound with like smoothies.
You can always add kale to
I never
your,
even think.
Your smoothies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do them when
yep.
I buy them. I always add kale to it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Really okay. That sounds refreshing. That sounds good. You know, I have to get into that drink thing. You know, like Karen, I had did that a couple times, but we also had bought some salad where it was like kale and broccoli and what was it, radicchio and some other stuff, but it was like all raw. And then I was like, that's probably a good salad, which it was, but it's probably also something that you could use to make one of those drinks that you're saying, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Man. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate that.
You're
Appreciate
welcome.
That.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, if there's no any more comments or anything regarding that, I'm just going to go into the intro of our book read that we're going to be reading. And even if you don't have the book, you can still join the call because it's going to be, you know, powerful and impactful, and we'll just, you know, slowly take it. It's not going to be like we're in this, like, contest to try to read it by a certain time. I'm going to read it. and take it the way God is going to have me take it. So if it's going to take some time, then that's what it's going to do. But I just wanted to just begin it because it's really a good book, and the individual who wrote it is really amazing, the journey that God took him on when doing this book. So I'm going to put everybody back on mute, and I'm going to do the about the author and maybe do a little bit of the intro before we close the segment of the show. Bear with me 1 second. Okay, the book is called The Case for Christ, and it's by Lee Strobel. Some of us might know who he is, some may not, but Lee Strobel was an atheist. His wife was Christian, and he was on this journey to determine Jesus Christ did not exist. However, he got more than what he bargained for. So let's hear a little bit about Mr. Lee Strobel. Lee Strobel, who holds a master's studies and law degree from Yale Law School, as well as a journalism degree from the University of Missouri, is the former legal editor of the Chicago Tribune. His awards include Illinois' highest honors for both investigative reporting and community service journalism from United Press International. His journey from atheism to Christianity was documented in his gold medallion-winning bestseller, The Case for Christ, a journalist's personal investigation of the evidence for Jesus. Currently, Lee is a teaching pastor at Saddleback Valley Community Church in Lake Forest, California, and is a board member of the Willow Creek Association. Previously, Lee was a teaching pastor at Willow Creek Community Church in suburban Chicago, and he has taught First Amendment law at Roosevelt University. His other bestsellers include Inside the Mind of Unchurched Harry and Mary, which also won a medallion, What Jesus Would Say, and God's Outrageous Claims, all published by Zondervan. His book, Reckless Homicide, has been used as a supplementary text at several law schools. Lee and his wife, Leslie, have been married for 28 years and have 2 adult children. Allison, an elementary education graduate of the University of Illinois, and Kyle, a biblical studies graduate of Judson College. I'm just going to read a couple of comments that was made about Mr. Lee Strobel. He was, as I said, a seasoned journalist chasing down the biggest story in history. His question, is there credible evidence that Jesus of Nazareth really is the Son of God? Retracing his own spiritual journey from atheism to faith, Lee Strobel, former legal editor of the Chicago Tribune, cross-examines a dozen experts with doctorates from schools like Cambridge, Princeton, Brandy, who are recognized authorities in their own field. Strobel challenged them with questions like, how reliable is the New Testament? Does evidence exist for Jesus outside the Bible? Is there any reason to believe the resurrection was an actual event? Strobel's tough, point-blank questions make this remarkable book read like a captivating, fast-paced novel. But it's not fiction. It's a riveting quest for the truth about history's most compelling figure. What will your verdict be in the case for Christ? There's a comment from Bruce Metzger. He said, Lee Strobel probes with bulldog-like tenacity the evidence for the truth of biblical Christianity. Philip Johnson says, Lee Strobel asked the questions a tough-minded skeptic would ask. His book is so good that he read it out loud to his wife every evening after dinner. Every inquirer should have read, and every inquirer should have read it and have the book. Philip Johnson, the law professor of the University of California, said, utterly fascinating. He wholeheartedly recommended. And then, you know, just people just going on and on to say how someone who tried to disprove that there was no existing of Jesus Christ, and they got just the opposite. I'm just going to read probably three paragraphs of the introduction because it's pretty long. So we'll catch it on next Friday, and God willing, the next Friday. It says in his introduction, he subtitles it, Reopening the Investigation of a Lifetime. In the parlance of prosecutors, the attempted murder case against James Dixon was a dead bag winner, open and shut. Even a cursory examination of the evidence was enough to establish that Dixon shot Police Sergeant Richard Scanlon in the abdomen during a scuffle on Chicago's South Side. Piece by piece, item by item, witness by witness, the evidence tightened a noose around Dixon's neck. There were fingerprints and a weapon, eyewitnesses and a motive, a wounded cop and a defendant with a history of violence. Now the criminal justice system was poised to trip the trapdoor that would leave Dixon dangling by the weight of his own guilt. The facts were simple. Sergeant Scanlon had rushed to West 108th Place after a neighbor called police to report a man with a gun. Scanlon arrived to find Dixon noisily arguing with his girlfriend through the front door of her house. Her father emerged when he saw Scanlon, figuring it was safe to come outside. Suddenly, a fight broke out between Dixon and the father. The sergeant quickly intervened in an attempt to break it up. A shot rang out. Scanlon, who was the police officer, staggered away, wounded in his midsection. Just then, two other squad cars arrived, screeching to a halt, and officers ran over to restrain Dixon. A .22 caliber gun belonging to Dixon, covered with his fingerprints, with one bullet having been fired, was found nearby, where he apparently flung it after the shooting. The father had been unarmed. Scanlon's revolver remained in his holster. Powder burns on Scanlon's skin showed that he had been shot at extremely close range. Fortunately, his wound wasn't life-threatening, although it was serious enough to earn him a medal for bravery, proudly pinned on his chest by the police superintendent himself. As for Dixon, when police ran his rap sheet, they found he had previously been convicted of shooting someone else. Apparently, he had a propensity for violence. And there I sat, almost a year later, taking notes in a nearly deserted Chicago courtroom, while Dixon publicly admitted that, yes, he was guilty of shooting the 15-year police veteran. On top of all the other evidence, the confession clinched it. Criminal court judge Frank Machado ordered Dixon in prison, then rapped his gavel to signal that the case was closed. Justice has been served. I slipped my notebook into the inside of my pocket of my sports coat and ambled downstairs toward the press room. At the most, I figured my editor would give me three paragraphs to tell the story on the next day's Chicago Tribune. Certainly, that's all it deserved. This wasn't much of a tale, or so I thought. The Whisper of an Informant. And this will be the last, this will be not the last part of the introduction, but this will be the last part of the introduction for tonight. But this is all working us up towards Lee Strobel's investigation for the case for Christ, which how he is going to think he's discrediting the case for Christ as if it doesn't exist, but he will find out differently. So let's continue to hear about the case of the individual who shot the policeman. The whisper of an informant. I answered the phone in the press room and recognized the voice right away. It was an informant I had cultivated during the year I had been covering the criminal courts building. I could tell he had something hot for me because the bigger the tip, the faster and softer he would talk, and he was whispering a mile a minute. Lee, do you know that Dixon case? He asked. Yeah, sure, I replied. I covered it 2 days ago. Pretty routine. Don't be sure. The word is that a few weeks before the shooting, Sergeant Scanlon was at a party showing off his pen gun. His what? A pen gun? It's a .22 caliber pistol that's made to look like a fountain pen. They're illegal for anyone to carry, including cops. Take note of what kind of gun he said he had and what it was. When I told him I didn't see the relevance of this, his voice got even more animated. Here's the thing. Dixon didn't shoot Scanlon. Scanlon was wounded when his own pen gun accidentally went off in his shirt pocket. He framed Dixon so he wouldn't get in trouble for carrying an unauthorized weapon. Don't you see? Dixon is innocent. Impossible, I exclaimed. Check out the evidence yourself, came his reply. See where it really points. I hung up the phone and dashed up the stairs to the prosecutor's office, pausing briefly to catch my breath before strolling inside. You know the Dixon case? I asked casually, not wanting to tip my hand too early. If you don't mind, I'd like to go over the details once more. Color drained from his face. I can't talk about it, he stammered. No comment. It turned out that my informant had already passed along his suspicions to the prosecutor's office. Behind the scenes, a grand jury was being convened to reconsider the evidence. Amazingly, unexpectedly, the once airtight case against James Dixon was being reopened. We'll hit on new facts for a new theory, God willing, on next Friday. And just basically know that this intro is leading up to a very, very powerful story based on a case for Christ. I'm going to open it up one more time. Feedback is always welcome. The lines are open.
I was just going to say that just how it, well, you kind of said it anyways, and probably everybody's thinking it, that how it directly parallels with Jesus' story, either us as believers or non-believers. When you, like, try to delve more into the history, you always think it's, like, cut and dry, or not, like, cut and dry, but kind of like, oh, whatever is there, that's what it is. But when anybody goes to look into Jesus, it's
right
more than what it is. There's a lot of, like he says right here, piece by piece, item by item, witness by witness. It's just like there's so much there. And I like how, I like the beginning of the book, how it doesn't go right into the story and how it parallels
right
James Dixon.
And that's the important, that's why it's so important to really listen. If you don't have the book, that's why it's important to listen to the intro. If you have a chance to take notes, because you will see the parallel, you know, you will see the parallel with the story of him regarding the case for Christ, you know, because this guy, he was like Peter, he was guilty when in fact the evidence is looking and pointing towards the fact that he's really innocent. So I think that
like
I think
Jesus.
The intro is going to be powerful.
Yeah.
Wait. Any other comments or? Well, just bear with us. Hold on a second. I'm gonna put everybody back on mute for a second. Just bear with the story. Be patient with the intro because it all leads up to a powerful story of Lee Strobel trying to discredit or I don't know, disprove is a word, but discredit the fact that Jesus Christ exists. So that's why the intro is so important for us to read so that we can make that connection with his research, like you see it, witness by witness, evidence by evidence, you know, just, you know, word for word or whatever he's trying to do. And it's just going to turn out to be something that he least expects to be hearing about, receiving, and, you know, just a spot. He's just going to be in for an amazing ride, and so are we. So I just hope you stick with us. Hopefully, if you can get the book, you can. If you can't, I will be reading it, and I do believe after, like, the chapters that we read, we, you know, there's questions or whatever. So I just think this is a great book to read, just kind of reiterate that we already know he exists, but just really reading it from a standpoint for someone who didn't believe, even though they was married to someone that was Christian, but doing their research, and now he has turned towards Christianity, and he's teaching the Word of God. So it just goes to show you how powerful God is through his Son, Jesus Christ. So we're going to, you know, stop that intro there. And then we'll pick up on new facts for a new theory, which is still part of the intro. Call is open. If anybody say anything before we close out the segment.
Thank you for sharing that information. Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
It is. You're welcome. So God willing, we will continue to do that. And I really appreciate everybody for, you know, supporting the show. And we're just going to keep moving forward and see what God has in store for us.
Sounds good.
All righty. Have a blessed and amazing evening. Appreciate
well.
You guys. Unless you have comments, I don't want to cut you short. Go ahead. All right. If there's not any more comments or questions or comments or concerns, then I will close the segment. So I don't want to cut people short. So if you had anything else you wanted to say, not. Have an amazing evening. Love you guys.
You as well. God bless. Love you too.
Bye. God bless.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Thank you, guys.
You're
bye-bye.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks again.
Okay.